Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 5 of the WP Cafe Show, a show where we chat to WordPress professionals about challenges, solutions, ideas around WordPress development, specifically for solo and small WordPress development teams. My name is Mark Wilkinson, and I'm today's host, and I'm joined by my co-host, Keith Devon.
Hello.
And in this episode, we're pleased to welcome Tom Hurst and Jack McConnell. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Cheers.
Now, we've called this episode Pricing WordPress Products and Services. Now, pricing WordPress is stuff that we've often found very, very tricky over the years. And I know that a lot of other freelancers and small WordPress agencies and professionals also find it difficult. And both Tom and Jack have lots of experience in this field with projects and products and plugins. So I'm sure we'll learn lots. We'll get new ideas and lots of new things. So as always, we're going to be keeping an eye on the comments in YouTube if you're watching live on YouTube. So please add your comments, your questions about what we're talking about to our panel, and we'll try and get through as many as we can. And also, stick us a comment in there. Let us know where you're listening from so we know who's around and where you're from. That'd be great. Okay, so before we get into the nitty-gritty, Tom, can you introduce yourself to our audience? Let us know who you are, what you do, please.
Yeah, sure. Cheers, Mark. Good intro. I'm Tom. And I've been in the WordPress ecosystem for the last 11 years as a developer, freelancing, kept it small, and just built out a freelance career using WordPress as the, you know, that center point. Recently started writing books about pricing and freelancing in general. So yeah, this is a really good topic to talk about for me.
Excellent. Thanks, Tom. And Jack, can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. Thanks. So I'm Jack McConnell, and I run a one-man web design agency just outside of Bath called Made With Fuel. And I also have two WordPress plugins, Better Notifications for WP and a new one, Content Notify. I also run a podcast called Pressing Matters, which happens every 2 weeks with a co-host.
Excellent. Sure to listen to that one as well. It's a good one. So, We're going to sort of talk about project work and products today. So we might split the two, or it might end up molding into one. We're just going to see how the conversation goes, essentially. So the first sort of question to get us started here is, how do you get from an initial inquiry, email comes in, I want to do X, Y, and Z, to a price? What actually does that look like? What does that journey look like from getting from that initial inquiry to actually giving a price and saying, look, we'll build this for you for this much, and it'll take this long. So, Tom, do you want to start us off with your thoughts on that, please?
Yeah, sure thing. I mean, the most important thing for me is asking the right questions of the prospect. So the first thing, obviously, that you want to try and get a gauge of is the scope of what you're going to be involved with doing before you give the price. But you also want to try and work out how valuable that is as well. So whether... The questions that I kind of like to ask are, you know, why do you want to work with me in particular? What kind of business outcomes are you looking for this project? Why do you want to do this right now? Try and gauge the level of urgency and things like that to then build a picture of price in my own head before I then present it to the client.
That's cool.
Do those things affect the price, the level of urgency and that?
Yeah, absolutely. For me, because if you... Let's say someone comes and says, I want it done super, super quick, then that comes at a premium, in my opinion, because I don't do bad work. I can do fast work if I put everything else to one side. So to me, that then has to come with, you know, extra price.
Okay. Yeah, makes sense. Yeah.
And it also means it's potentially more valuable, you know, to the client, right? I mean, and value
exactly.
has to come into the equation somewhere.
Yeah, they're obviously in a bit of a pickle. If someone needs something like tomorrow or next week, or, you know, depending on what your lead times are, if they need it within a couple of weeks, that might be really fast. So
yeah.
They obviously are in a bit of a pickle. The planning's gone wrong. They've had someone else let them down. So then that project is then instantly more valuable to that person.
Can I just pick up on one thing you said there? You said you ask, like, why the prospect would like to work with you, like the why me, effectively.
Yeah.
What kind of answers do you get from that kind of question? Because it's something that I've kind of thought of asking lots of times, and I thought actually that would be a great question. Do people have an answer, or do you find that you stump them sometimes?
Yeah, you can. There's normally three different like responses to this. Like, there's one, the one that you really want is one that says, oh, Tom, I really like your work. You know, or I was recommended to you by someone else, or you did something like many years ago and I want to come back and use you again. That's the one that you want. So you're instantly, you know, your ears prick up when you get that kind of response. But then you'll also get the one that says, I don't know, I just Googled WordPress developers.
Got you.
And then you instantly kind of know that they're maybe just fishing for prices, kicking tires. So then, you know, that prioritizing responding to that lead, you know, would probably go further down my list. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes, you just get the people that say, yeah, I've got no idea. I'm literally just wanting the best price. And then obviously that then probably goes down a bit on my priority list to respond to as well. So yeah, the one that you want is someone who actually gives you an answer to that, and you can qualify a lead depending on how much you want in work at that moment in time pretty quickly by answering that specific question.
So that's just you gauging how good a client that is for you, not necessarily gauging what price that project might be.
A bit of both, really, because obviously I want to know, do they know anything about me whatsoever? Like, I talk about on my website how I do a lot of headless WordPress stuff as a bit of a speciality. So if they come to me and say, I want to work with you for, I don't know, your WordPress and Gatsby skills or your WordPress and Next.js skills, I know that they've done a bit of research. I know that the whole process is just going to be that bit more smoother if they know who I am. Yeah. But then equally, what you said, Mark, is I would consider that in the pricing equation too. Because if they really want me over everyone else, then that's valuable as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Do you find that, does that conversation normally happen on the phone, video calls, emails?
I try to do everything. Well, I try and qualify people by email first.
Yeah.
Well, actually, no, website first, usually.
Yeah.
But it depends what kind of frame of mind. I mean, I used to try and qualify people by price on my website, you know, through like the contact form.
Yeah.
So the minimum option would be, I don't know, 5K or something like that.
Yeah.
So then it instantly kind of filters out those people that are, you know, lower budget work, or perhaps it's only a small portion of work. But then when I started to try and maybe outsource a few more projects, I kind of took that away from my contact form. So then I'd try and qualify them then after the fact in email. But yeah, all my main sales discussions, at least in the initial stage, take place on email. I try and get it done and dusted there before. Basically, I've got to know that they've got the money before I take them onto the phone, because organizing a phone call and having like a 30-minute sales call is quite draining, I find, on my time, especially as a dev. I find that context switch pretty costly. It's not just the 30-minute sale call. It's, you know, the preparation for that and then getting back into developing after that as well. So I try and do a lot of that qualification, at least initially, by email.
Jack, does this... Sorry, go ahead, Mark.
They know they have the money. You mentioned that, making sure they know they have the money. I think that's interesting. I want to bring Jack in, though, just to see what your process is like, and if there's anything different or anything that you want to add to that.
Yeah, sure. No, that was really interesting what Tom was saying there. And there's a number of similarities I think we have in how we go about it. The first thing that I do is qualify people more or less based on what kind of budget they have. I'm very open, transparent about what I do, what services I provide, and what kinds of costs you can be looking at on my website. So I find that, like Tom says, it gets rid of like the tire kickers, the people that have really low budgets, the people that don't necessarily see the value in who I am and what I do, and ultimately just want a local WordPress developer or, you know, something. So I find that, having prices on the site are really good. That basically, every time they click on a service, it takes them through to the contact form. And on there, I have quite clearly what my lead time is, and then the list of those services again, so they can choose which one they want if it hasn't kind of pulled through from another page. And then, they fill out their details. I always ask for as much. I try and lead them a bit, you know, please provide some information. Don't just put, I need a website, that kind of thing, and then get in touch. And usually you find that by the time a person has gotten through to that form, by the time they've filled out that information, it's been sent to me, you already have a fairly good idea of what their budget might be if they've, you know, if they're not a tire kicker. And based on the contents of the form, if they've written very little, you can see what kind of value they assign to their project as well. I tend to find that the people that are more passionate about something are the people that really want to talk about it, or actually, you know, tell you, look, this is the project that I have. I'm building a website for, I don't know, it might be a recipes website or something, and they want to tell you about it and what their USPs are. And that's a really helpful thing. And much like Tom, it's not that I dislike phone calls, but I do also find them draining. You know, they can take up huge amounts of time. You get, it's not that you don't get value from it, because especially at a time like this, it's really nice to talk to another person, you know, over the phone, or see them in a Zoom call or a Skype call or something. But trying to organize all of that can be quite draining. So I usually, again, try and qualify them some more, try and get them to fill out a bit more information, and then say, I'm free for a call. And I usually try and leave it a few days or a week just to say, can we schedule a call for this time, that kind of thing. And then get them to have a chat with me. And then if they're really up for that, that's good. If they start asking questions like, can we do it sooner? That's a bit of a red flag and that kind of thing. So, it was interesting, actually. Tom brought up a thing that I would potentially see as a red flag is the level of urgency that someone wants. Mm. So if they say, we want this really quickly, or we've been let down, to me, they're already on kind of edge with a project. So that concerns me. And Tom, I totally get that you say, okay, well, they need that more urgently. There's more value that they have. Therefore, their budget has to be bigger. Personally, I tend to give those projects a wide berth, because I don't want a kind of stress or worry. But if you're prepared to deal with it and you have a really good system for it, I can definitely see that being a really great kind of thing to do.
I think there's probably a sweet spot, isn't there, for that? Like, there's projects that the client, they just don't really care about, and it doesn't really matter when it happens. That's a massive red flag for me. And then, like you say, Jack, like, I don't really want to work on the super, super stressful stuff where you're going to be just under pressure from day one, unless there's like, a nice premium attached to it.
It depends who it's coming from as well. Like, you can do a bit of research. So if it's like a large company that have literally had like a genuine letdown, it's been through no fault of anyone really, it might have been a health emergency or something like that, then, you know, you can take that into consideration. Dig a bit deeper, because I agree, Jack, like, if someone says, I need this tomorrow, and my other developer was, you know, crap, then red flag straight away, you know, without any reasoning behind that, or doing your own research, then there's no amount of money that you can put on, you know, a stressful project. I mean, well, there probably is, let's be fair. You could probably say, I want, you know, 100 grand for like something that you do for 10 grand normally. That'd take the stress away pretty quickly for me, at least, anyway. But I know what you're saying, that there's a middle ground, right, where you know, you might, an extra 2 grand doesn't make it any less stressful. You know what I'm trying to say? So do your research on those kind of clients.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
So you said, obviously, Tom, I think, said, like, you need to know that they have the money. So to know they have the money, does that have an effect? Not effect. I'm trying to say, you need to know what they want to do before you know how they have the money. So the two things are linked. So I need to know what they're trying to achieve, because that will affect roughly how much money it's going to cost. Yeah. So I'm just wondering, how do you get to the point where they're asking me to do this, and therefore they need at least this type thing?
Yeah, because it's all very well having like 10K. It sounds like a good budget, but if it's a 30K project, then it's not great, is it?
I think one tactic that I've employed really is to give like a range of costs pretty much straight away. So obviously what I do is mainly custom WordPress sites. So some of them might be really simple. It might just be a brochure site, but then some might have an integration. So I see what you're saying, but the baseline I try and throw in is say, look, my projects start at a minimum of X and often exceed a much higher figure. So I try and give like quite a broad range, but it instantly puts that kind of price in their head. And if they don't respond at all, usually sometimes, or they get back and they say, oh, that's, you know, going to be too much, thank you for your time, You can kind of work out if it's going to be a good fit pretty quickly. Yeah. But to answer the question about scope, you've obviously got to delve deeper into scope, especially if you're doing a project price at some point. But I've always got like a rough figure in my head in terms of the level of involvement and then how I would price that. And I usually do it in my head as like 5K increments. Mm. So let's say we're doing a brochure website. I might say, is it based from a theme? Do I need to bring a designer in? If it's based from a theme, I might be able to do it for 5 grand. If I want to bring a designer in, it might go up to 10 grand if we're doing some like, you know, really some conversion rate optimization or really heavy UX stuff. Am I bringing in integrations? Am I trying to get do a headless website or something? Then I'm just going up 5, 5, 5. That's kind of roughly how I would do it to then put that price in their head really early on. And then if they balk at that price, then obviously, you know, it's not going to work.
With that price, do you Do you stay on the low side? Do you go on the high side? Do you try to go somewhere down the middle?
High side.
On the high
I've
side.
Always gone on the high side. Yeah, I've always done that. I've always tried to, I suppose sometimes appearing as the premium option is a marketing tactic as well.
Yeah.
And I've always tried to do that because number one, obviously I know I do a good job and I believe in my level of service. But number two, I think it kind of puts you in a different realm of clients that come to you in the first place.
Yeah.
If you see what I'm trying to say. Absolutely. If you go bottom end all the time, you're just going to keep attracting more of the same type of clients.
Yeah.
And I think that's what a lot of small agencies and freelancers kind of, they just moan that they get these, you know, low paying, hard to handle clients all the time, but they keep accepting them. And the more that you accept them, the more that you're going to reflect that back out and get more back in, you know, of the same kind of clients. So it does start with, you know, your positioning essentially.
Yeah. Jack, go ahead, Mark. I was just going to say, ask Jack, because you do put some price guides on your website, like you said, for like the different types of services. It's like prices from. So that is kind of, I guess, putting the lower end of the price out there. So how does that kind of play out for you? Do you find that people are like further down the line when you have a full scope and that price is higher? Is that difficult? Is that difficult for you to deal with, or do you find that people kind of generally get that it is from this price and it's likely to be higher? Like, how does that all play out for you?
Yeah, sure. The from price really, like I say, it removes the tire kickers that they can get a membership site for, you know, £1,000 kind of thing. And the prices from is really, that's how I envisage an assembly project, what I call an assembly project. You take a WordPress theme, you take WordPress, you take some plugins, you put it all together, you create some pages, and you've got yourself a bog standard kind of WordPress site that has been assembled using those composite components.
Yeah.
More custom options, which I think I kind of mentioned on the site as well, start from a different price range. And you can hopefully understand that they start from here, but ultimately, if you want something better, they start from here instead. So you can roughly gauge what kind of a person they are based on which option they choose, what kind of level of commitment you're going to have to give to that project, how long that's going to take, how much money you can expect to get from that person, and so on. And then there's also opportunity for upsell through that as well, because, you know, they've started off saying, okay, well, here's, I want to have, I don't know, an all digital download site. We're going to use EDD for that. It's going to be an assembly project. But then all of a sudden, once you get into the kind of the meat of it, they're actually selling something that will need some custom plugin development or a custom part of that theme which needs to be developed. So you can add that on. And it just gives you an idea, really. It's just starting point. And it is mostly to kind of remove tire kickers, but I try and make it fair. All of my prices are based off a day rate and how long I think those things are going to take. So if you were to take my current day rate, which is displayed just below all my services, and then divide it by, you know, or divide the amount by the day rate, you'll get roughly how many days you think it should take me to complete that project. So if it's an assembly project, you know, it might take me 14 days. And if it's a custom project, it might take me 3 months. And you can kind of work it all out. Like I said, I try and be as transparent as I can around it.
Yeah.
How do you think that works for you then, Jack? You know, where you say you try and work out everything from a day rate kind of thing.
It's fine. Yeah. I found that pricing everything off a day rate, it just allows me to dedicate my complete attention to that one particular, client at a time. So that they know what they're going to be paying for on a daily basis. And that helps with kind of future stuff. So after the project's been completed, or maybe they just want some investigation work done prior to that project, they know what my day rate is going to be. So I always try and price it in that way. And I try and price my day rate in a way that I'm happy, you know, industry experience, industry, you know, knowledge, you know, what I'm currently doing at the moment, that kind of thing. And I try and balance it with, you know, outgoings and expenditure and all that sort of stuff, you know, standard kind of day rate stuff. But in terms of putting it together and providing a price, I would say I've got it pretty accurate. I mean, I've been doing, you know, web design, web development stuff professionally, you know, with my business now for nearly 10 years. And that's enough time for me to know doing this kind of project takes this long.
Yeah.
My day rate is this. I know how much that's going to cost. You know, obviously there's profit built into that. There is usually a day or two of not you know, like chatting things through or some unexpected things coming up built into that price as well. So it's not just a straight, okay, this project's going to take Jack 14 days, or let's just say 2 weeks, so 10 working days. And each one of those days is going to be working, bang, 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 done. There's always going to be stuff built into that as well. You know, chatting at the beginning, chatting at the end, launching the site, stuff that you don't actually think of, not actual development work, not actually assembly work. And that's all kind of built into the price, really, just based on experience of, you know, X number of projects I've done over the years. And I know how long that those parts take.
Mm. And I mean, do you present then that day estimate to the client? So you're giving them a price, but that you've based on days times rate, right? Do you tell them that that's how you've done the price, or is that just for you personally?
Yeah, no, I tell them. So when I send out a project proposal to them, I'll give a kind of a day breakdown at the end saying, this is how much out of your budget, these are roughly how many days I'm going to be taking on planning, wireframing, design development, you know, launching it, putting in content, all that sort of stuff. So they can see the breakdown at the understand. Yeah. And again, they should be able to kind of pull that back out towards, this is Jack's day rate. This is how he's spending it on our project. This is the budget we've given him. And it all should make sense to them.
Yeah. So are they paying for a project cost, or are they paying for a number of days?
That's what
so
I'm getting.
The point being is if you've said, I'm going to spend 14 days, and actually you've miscalculated it because you've maybe not done that thing exactly before, are you taking the hit, or are they having to pay more to you to finish it off?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I always make sure that they understand it is an estimate that I'm providing based on all of the information, you know, aggregated from, you know, the phone call, the project, the initially getting in touch, everything we've talked about, the project proposal, everything. Yeah. It is an estimate. It's not a quote. Yeah. And I think that's something that I see quite often, that people think quote and estimate is interchangeable. Mm-hmm. They're not. They're two completely separate things. So I make sure that they understand that and they're happy with that. I always make sure that if something doesn't go right or there's an area of uncertainty in the project, like, okay, we need to connect it to this API service. I'll give an example, actually. A couple of years ago, I was asked to write an integration with a postcode, UK postcode service. So they went to pull that into a Gravity form. You put in your postcode, it then goes off with that postcode, grabs a list of addresses, you choose your address, put it all in, so on. There was a bit of an uncertainty around that because their API was behind, you know, a login. You had to pay for that service first. The client didn't want to pay for the service before they started using it. This was kind of a couple of months in advance. So I said, okay, there's uncertainty around this part of the project. When we get to that part, we will get you to sign up. We'll have a look at the API. We'll see how it works. We'll pull it all in. It's all much of a muchness. It should be, I roughly know what to expect, but because there's uncertainty, I would keep aside, say, 1 or 2 days worth of my day rate. You know, have that on top of what you've already got if you can, and then that way if there's any problems, we've got that to play with as well. So I always try and make sure I highlight those parts to the client. There has been, I can probably count it on one hand how many times I've gone over a budget that I've given in the last 5 years because something's happened, you know, something's taken longer, we changed direction in some way, which meant that had to be adjusted. And as long as the client fully understands, you know, that's fine. You can change what you want to do at any time, but it will reflect the estimate. You know, it will change things, you know, the cost. My day rate doesn't change. How much time I'm going to spend on it doesn't change. When we might be able to deliver it will change, you know, and all that sort of stuff. So I like to keep it flexible. And I suppose on that basis, you could say, yes, you are hiring me for a certain number of days, which then has all that flexibility around it. And you're not buying me for a project. But then I like to see that as, okay, we're stopping here, or, you know, we want to completely change direction, and they've got that flexibility where if you're, and this is the Jonathan Stark kind of thing, wasn't it? Where he was talking about in your podcast, Keith, where he was saying about, you know, do a whole project, you know, and build in all of that kind of uncertainty into it and give that as a price. Mm. I just prefer to kind of dial it back and just be more transparent about the process as I'm doing it.
I think there's definitely pros and cons.
I'm just conscious of time, Keith, so I want to move on, because obviously we've got the product list to talk about as well.
But
just, there is a question I want to come to in the comments in a second. I'll do that now, actually. I'll come to that. So someone says, Dan Curtis, thanks for your comment question. He says, I would be interested to know how we all approach payments from projects in terms of splitting the payment and payment options. I often find that splitting a payment into 30, 30, 40 is really useful. So I just wonder if the two could comment on how you price the sort of pricing arrangements.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I normally ask for 100% upfront because that's just like the base point. But then typically nine times out of 10 negotiate down to 50-50. And I've always found that to be to work pretty well for me. I think it shares the responsibility between the client and the freelancer. So, you know, you're obviously, you're getting the money up front. You know that it's going ahead. Because in my experience, if you don't get a deposit, then the project's not a project. That's, you know, that no one's fully committed until they've actually sent that money, in my experience. Yeah. So getting that at least 50%, you know, a decent chunk. I think on a couple of occasions, if it's been like a project that's lasted, I don't know, more than 6 months, I might do 33, 33, 33. I'm fairly flexible, but I mean my main stance is 100% upfront, especially on if it's a consultancy gig and it's not necessarily coding. Get it all up front, and then you can always negotiate then on the terms and feel like, you know, you've given a bit of leeway and things like that.
Yeah.
100% wow, Simon says in the comments.
Yeah.
Which is good. Jack, what about yourself? Have you got a different model or the same or similar?
Yeah, I usually do 30-30-30-10. And that's just because I tend to break it up into like design, development, and then kind of launch. So there'll be a certain amount of planning, wireframing, that'll be 30. Design stage, that's a big stage, that'll be another 30 after that's done. Hmm. So then they're paying for the deliverables that they're seeing, basically. And then development, 30. Let them add their content, let me add their content, launch the site, and then the 10%. And that way, you know that you've basically gotten to the end of the project, you've gotten the majority of the money for it, and you just need that little bit after it's gone live. And I usually have a thing in my contract that says, if it takes longer than 30 days, you know, for you to go live, or, you know, you're stuck waiting for content or something, I'll just ask for that 10%. Yeah. I won't not help you get the site live. I will always do that. But I just ask for that 10%, you know, after 30 days anyway.
Yeah, because that's outside of your control then. So, yeah, you kind of deserve that money because you've sort of done what you can do, and you don't want to be waiting on that last 10% forever while they get all their content in place or whatever. So, yeah.
You should always have like some kind of clause. So like payments, if you're going to do milestones, like payment on X date rather than relying on the client to complete their half, because you know what clients are like sometimes, especially when it's like getting content out of them, it's like getting blood out of a stone sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think we've tried every pricing structure under the sun, haven't we, Mark? So like we're currently doing something a little bit different with a lot of our clients, and actually like breaking up a project and letting clients pay over a year, like monthly.
Okay.
Which is, you know, a big departure from our usual kind of 50-50, which is what we would normally do, and that's worked quite well for us. But we started doing a little bit of work in the recruitment industry. And a lot of the website providers in that industry, nearly all of them actually now, go with this monthly model. It just seems to have like taken hold, and people seem to really, really like it. Obviously, does put a little bit of risk back on our plates, but we've taken like fairly big projects, divided it up like the cost up by 12, and just be like, okay, you've got a contract with us for a year. We'll host the site and do everything for that year, so we have some kind of control. We're not just like handing something over and then they can just go dark on us. But like, so we'll host the site, so we've got some control over it. And then at the end of that year, they can keep hosting with us or take it elsewhere. But we've directly won projects based on that model. You know, that's what the feedback was. One of the main reasons we went with you guys is because of this monthly offer. It just really worked for them. But it is a risk. So
we'll see. That'd be too much of a risk for me, because I feel like you're doing a lot of work up front for potentially only one payment, especially in this industry. But I mean, I admire that you're experimenting with it, because that's one of the things that I talk about all the time, is people should experiment more with price to actually find out what the market wants and what's a good fit for your services. Because a lot of people they might pick a day rate and stick on it for 5 years. And then that's all that they ever do. They never raise the price. They never try different tactics like what you guys have done. That's really
one
cool story.
There is one caveat to that, in that they have to host the website with us. So we can't have it hosted somewhere else for that 12-month period. For obvious reasons. But most of, like I said, we won work based on that. So it's obviously
it's quite nice as well. Like the kind of recurring revenue that that creates as well. So if we can get up to 10 or 15 clients or whatever it is, like doing that, like we've got a really nice steady revenue stream. It's not so much kind of feast and famine and so
a minimum contract then of 12 months. Is that how it works?
I think we've done it 12 both.
Can they leave after that and you'll give them the site or
That's right. Yep. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Website, they can do what they want with it.
Yeah, once it's paid for, then they have options. So
yeah, is it like a productized service then that you did? So is it like a set price for everyone, or is it custom?
No, it's custom. So we it's like a normal custom project. We price it up like a custom project, and then we just slice it up.
Just divide it. Yeah.
And we do actually. Another thing worth saying is we do put a premium on that. So if they take that option over the year, they'll be paying 20% more.
Okay.
So that kind of offsets a little bit of the risk that we're taking on, but people still seem to go for it. So if it works, we actually end up winning in the longer term, from a price point of view.
If people are going to you for that specifically, then I think you could probably go even higher with that premium.
Well, yeah, possibly.
But more than 20%, definitely.
Yeah. So yeah, it's just been interesting.
Yes,
I'm just conscious of time again. I want to get onto products. There is one last question that I do want to ask about specifically on projects and retainers and things like that. Something we get asked all the time with initial inquiries, and it's sort of like someone comes along and says, "What's the ballpark price for this?" And what's like, how do you handle that? Because I can understand why the client wants to know how much it's going to cost. And we always, me and Keith always chat about examples about outside of the web industry. So my example is usually, I want an extension on my house. I haven't a clue what it's going to cost. Yeah. So can you just give me a ballpark to get me in the game, if that makes sense, as to whether I can actually afford this? So I just wondered how you handle that question, if you've ever had it, Jack.
Like I say, a lot of the time it's on my site and it gets rid of, you know, it doesn't get rid of, you know, I say it like it's a bad thing. It just, you know, it means I'm getting the more clients that I want to deal with as well, as that's another really big reason behind it. But yeah, I do get that, and that certainly helps having that idea of price on the site. I think I always compare it to like cars, like what kind of car do you want? Like, you know, you say like house, and I get that completely. But I always think like, if you just want a car that will get you around, then it's going to be cheaper than a car that you can get around in some form of luxury and, you know, provide you with a cocktail as soon as you get in the door kind of thing. Yeah. But providing you're a passenger. But it's a mocktail. I do get that. And some people, you know, somehow they'll get my email address, or they email me directly, or they'll, you know, get forwarded from someone else. So they don't come via my website and they don't come via my contact form. They'll be referred and they want to have an idea. And in which case I use my website again as a bit of like a, that's my thought process has gone there, and I can refer back to that and say, you know, you're looking at this kind of thing. But it, what that does give me is a bit more opportunity to think about what they're asking, rather than, you know, they kind of they qualify themselves through the site essentially. So I can ask them a bit more questions, and the price might be different. Most of the time the people that come via a referral, they've already kind of been referred and they're already on board at a certain point, so I've got more time to kind of pay more attention to them, listen to them, and, you know, see what they want to do.
Just looking at the comment, the electric code company, I don't know who that is from the electric code company, if you want to tell us who you are, that'd be great, said that they ask for, when they ask for a ballpark, they just give a really broad range, you know, like 5 to 10k or something, which is something I suppose we've done in the past as well.
Yeah, we do that quite a lot.
Yeah, Tom, you don't put prices on your site, so I just wondered how you get around that question.
Yeah, so yeah, I mean, like what we talked about at the beginning, kind of like a ballpark for anybody that comes in would be like, I can't take anything on that's less than 5 grand. That's like my kind of, you know, line in the sand that I've set. And then I also mentioned that, you know, projects typically exceed 10, because that's just the truth. You know, a lot of my projects are a bit more complicated than the standard site. So that's the kind of thing that I lead with. But I also, like with price, I've learned not to really, I don't know, not dwell on it too much. Sometimes I just pick a price. I'll do a really quick assessment. Like, say if someone gives me a couple of lines and I can see, it's through experience as well, right? You know, you learn, the more projects that you price, the better that you get at it. So like someone comes to me with, they say, oh, I've got a WordPress website, I want to, it's WooCommerce, we've got 100 projects. You know, I'm already building that picture of what this could cost based on previous experience. So I'll just give them like a rough figure pretty much off the bat, depending on, you know, the level of functionality that they require.
Cool. Can I ask one more question, Mark, before we move on to products? Do you guys ever charge for discovery? So getting to that, like pre-fixed price, you charge for discovery?
Yeah, 100%, because I mean, that's one of my pet hates, that people just get a lot of freelancers on the phone, extract all the best ideas and go with the cheapest option, and then use all those ideas with one person. I just think it's so underhand. So one of the things that I always say is that, you know, just don't get tricked into giving, you know, your valuable information and doing research on projects before you've been paid anything, before you've got any level of commitment. Because, I mean, definitely before you do a fixed price project, you need to know at least 90% of the scope, right? Without factoring in contingency. So if they don't want to scope it, then I can't give you a price unless I do the scope with you. And that's how I kind of phrase it. That's how I lead into it. But then that's obviously always a paid pre-project.
Yeah, cool. Do you do something like that, Jack, too?
I do, yeah. I don't have a problem giving away some information as such, but it just shows that I'm experienced and that I have some understanding of what that person wants. Mm-hmm. But I'm totally with Tom. Yeah, if you want to know what kind of plugins we're going to use, or, you know, some idea of how this website might work, what kind of flow the user might have or anything like that, any kind of detail, yeah, they've absolutely got to book in some time with me and pay for that, whatever that may look like, phone call, you know, a report, whatever it might be.
Yeah, I normally split that with, like, I always call it specific value or generic value. Like, I'll give generic value away for free, that's fine. But as soon as we start getting into the specifics of a project, that has to come paid.
Yeah, we had an inquiry recently. Hopefully the client won't watch this show. But we had an inquiry recently about some, to build a plugin, custom plugin, and it needed to talk to an API that we haven't worked with before and do a bunch of stuff like that. And on the call, the client said something like, yeah, there's obviously going to need to be some like research that you guys do before you actually do the work. And I was like, that is the work. Like, understanding the API and your requirements is the most important part of the work. So it's just hard sometimes to get people to understand that, really. But cool, let's move on then.
Let's move on. Just quickly, Simon Nolan, thank you, in the comments said, I quote using a spreadsheet with itemized pricing for design, dev, management and launch. We actually do use a spreadsheet sometimes just to stick some of the things we have to do in, just try and put some numbers for it, just to get us an idea of what it's going to cost as well. So that can often be a good little thing, just to give you an idea of scoping and how much things are going to cost in terms of that. Let's move on to products. So I guess with WordPress, we're not just talking plugins, but I think products is in the WordPress land of things is a lot about plugins, and just thought it would be good to talk about pricing for those. So big question, big open-ended question, I guess, to start. We'll start with Jack, is how do you come up with a price for your plugin, your product? I've got this idea for a product, I've built it. You said you've got two, is it Better Notifications? And what was your own Content
Notify.
Content Notify. So if you're selling those, how do you say, well, let's just £50 or £100 or whatever it is? How do you come up with that price? What's the way?
Well, the short answer is with great difficulty. I have always struggled with product pricing for some reason, and it might just be experience, the amount of time I've done it. Service pricing just seems to come more naturally, more easily maybe to me. Maybe there's more information about it that's out there, more things to read about. When I was trying to, Better Notifications for WP is a free plugin, and then you've got paid add-ons that you can get which extend that functionality. It's pretty common, obviously, you know, business model in the WordPress world, plugin world. And I released two add-ons to start with, and when I was trying to work out pricing for them, I actually wrote a blog post about how I did that, and I even gave a talk about it, which actually, Mark, you were at a couple of years ago, about pricing WordPress product, running it as a side business. And I didn't really have an answer now, other than I looked at other plugins. I looked at what they were doing, what they were selling, you know, plugins that had add-on models, plugins that were, you know, had a free and a pro version, tried to work out what kind of percentages there were between things, and then price my plugin accordingly. And then I tried to factor in some functionality as well. There's also, when you're just getting started, that whole, this is brand new, it may well contain bugs and you're buying into, you know, me as a developer or this as a service or whatever it might be. And I think you just lower your price ever so slightly because of that. And then as time goes on, I've slowly increased the prices of my add-ons to a point where I think they are reflective of the functionality that they add. I try and factor in with my sort of service head on what kind of cost savings and benefits those are going to give me if I install that. So this plugin, if I had to develop it or develop, you know, even just a hodgepodge version of it using, like a hodgepodge version of it using like advanced custom fields or a post type or whatever, and put that into a theme, how long would that take? And then try and make sure that mine is not only competitive, but also it shows the value that you're getting from doing that. Yeah. And it's in a plugin, so it should be better. It's in the right place. It's a functional thing, not a visual thing, and so on. So
you mentioned that you look at other plugins to try and gauge. Were they competitive plugins or were they just plugins in general and in the WordPress space?
They were plugins in general. To be honest with you, I took inspiration from mainly Easy Digital Downloads because they had a huge library of add-ons.
Yeah, yeah.
And they had obviously first-party and third-party add-ons available at that time. And obviously they've moved a bit more towards like first-party ones or acquiring third-party ones now. But I liked what they were doing because you got to see the whole scope of things. So you had people with a very small amount of functionality, a very functional little add-on, and it might be just, you know, a few pounds, like £10 or something. And then you had whopping great big things like their software licensing plugin add-on that was, I can't remember the price, but I want to say it was under $100 at that point where they changed their pricing model a few years later, a few years ago now, and now it's like $249 or something like that. But yeah, I just tried to get an idea. That was when I was starting off. I don't follow the same kind of pattern now. When I had to price my new plugin, that's just a premium plugin. There's no free version, at least not at this time. And I just was going for a pure premium option. This is the price. And then I set three price tiers like you normally do. This many sites, that many sites, unlimited sites. And that was a completely different thing because it's not an add-on. It's not the free and then the add-on model. It's just the one thing that you're buying.
So I'll come to you in a minute, Tom. But when you were doing the better notifications one, you mentioned that you've got the freemium. So it's free. Anyone can use it. Was that a conscious thing that you thought, I'm going to make it free and then I'm going to make money on add-ons? Or was it just that you wrote the plugin and thought, this is awesome, let people have it, and then thought, oh, I could actually add some add-ons and sell them?
It's more the latter rather than the former.
Okay.
So when I built it, it's because I built it with a friend over a weekend, as a lot of plugins are made, or things are made in general. And I built it because I couldn't find another solution for what I wanted to do and an easy way to do it. So I did it as more of like a, I can do this, we can do this kind of thing. And then we put it on WordPress.org and then it started to grow because other people liked it as well. And then it got, you know, changed and adapted and, you know, improved and so on. And then I thought, well, now I'm that far down the road, I can see, okay, well, you know, we do email notifications. That's what the plugin does. Wouldn't it be great if you can include information from custom fields? Because that's not just, you know, there's that in WordPress. So that was an add-on. That was the first add-on we released. And then other things have come up.
Mapped out when you built the original one in that, oh, I know I could do this and this and this. Or have they just come about since almost?
Yeah, no, they came about since. I mean, I always had an idea of things that you could add on to it, but it wasn't in the form of like individual add-on plugins. It was always like I can see where this could go. I mapped it out. I had a roadmap basically. And then it became quite easy to sort of say, well, this has value to people, you know, this could be paid, that could be free and so on. And that's how I've tried to do it. And I've always tried to weigh it up. So I'm not just concentrating on all my time on the paid stuff. I'm also giving back to the free plugin as well.
Mm.
Cool.
Let's go to Tom. So what about you? So I know you've got your book that you sell. So how did you come up with the price for that and decide on the pricing?
Yeah, so I was just going to say my product pricing experience is kind of different to Jack's because I can remember like 10 years ago thinking I'm going to build themes, I'm going to put them on Theme Forest, and I was always I always like moved away from it because of the support and you know the tie of the support, having to do all that, you know, and updating it and things like that. So that's what always shied me away from that. My, like you say, with a book, that's where my product pricing experience is. And similarly to Jack, really, I looked at what other people were selling their ebooks for. For me, there wasn't really anything like, especially my pricing book, out there, you know, that was comparable on Gumroad. I mean, there's obviously Jonathan Stark's Hourly Bill in His Nuts. I think he prices that at $49, something like that. And I just, to be honest, I just picked a price and I just put it up and just see, tested it basically. I went with $19 initially, you know, like as a pre-order, just to try and get some sales in and just to actually spur me on to write the thing. And then I put it up when I launched to $39, and it sold $10,000 worth. So I must have got something kind of right. But I think, yeah, I'm going to experiment with the next one, maybe go in a little bit lower at that full price cost and just and see how it goes. So, yeah, but it's just all about conveying that value, like what Jack said, you know, with a plugin, like how valuable is this functionality to this person who's searching for it? Yeah. And it's the same with the book, you know, because there wasn't a lot of information out there similar to what I write about. I thought, you know, this is quite valuable. So that gave me the confidence to put it up at a slightly higher than average price, I would say.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's kind of how I came to that level of thinking with a $39 mark.
Do you have to sell the value of that book then on the page where I'm buying, do you feel? Or does that not matter? Is it just the title absolutely. Of the book does the job?
I'm always selling the value of the book, like with all the tweets that I do and the landing page and tweaking the copy and things like that. And I think that that's just sales in general. You know, you've got to talk about the benefits of your product, no matter what it is, rather than, you know, it's got this feature, that feature, it's this long, you know, whatever. Talk about the benefits. What will someone get out of working with you or buying your product, essentially? And that should be your number one marketing strategy.
Yeah. I was surprised, actually, Tom, to hear you say that you're going to experiment with a lower price point. I would have been convinced that you were going to go high next time.
Yeah, I know. And then to be honest, that is typically what I would normally do. And that's my normal approach. But I am learning that pricing services and pricing products, especially ebooks, it's kind of different. It's not this, you can't apply the same thing. And I'm sure it's the same with the plugins, Jack, as well. You can't just take the service pricing mindset and apply it to the products. It's a different kind of market. It's a different kind of buyer. So yeah, I think I'd probably go about $10 lower, to be honest, on the next one. Even though I stand by what the book's worth, and I think I'll never reduce that price because that's just my pride. People always ask, oh, are you going to run a discount? Are you going to do a sale? Nope. It's $39. And if you buy it, you buy it. If you don't, you don't.
Yeah. I remember, must be a couple of years ago now, I don't know if you guys saw like refactoring UI, all the stuff around that. So there's that, and that was released as an ebook, and it came. So I'm just looking at the page now because I was just wondering if the price had changed. They're selling that for $79, but the complete package they priced at $250. So that was like including a bunch of videos and some like downloadable resources and things. And I remember thinking, oh my god, I've never seen something so expensive. I bought it. Like, it was just like, because it's exactly what I wanted, you know. It's
so
like,
it was worth it. It was worth it to you at that moment in time, right?
And I just think with your book especially, Tom, like, it's valuable. Like, it's, you're teaching people how to make money. So I just think maybe you could experiment with something higher. And it's that thing, like, maybe the higher you price it, the more value people will attach to it as well. So
I don't know. That is part of the strategy, Keith, to be honest. That is part of the strategy. I want people to read the book. I want them to invest in it. I don't want them to just buy it for $9 and never read it.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? I want to make it a higher price. I want people to review it. I want people to talk about it and things like that. I think, it's probably just getting more eyes on it at the moment for me to get more sales. But I think I've sold about 365 copies.
Congratulations.
Which is, thanks. So it's a decent start. And like I said, the pricing book's got to be the most expensive book, right? So out of all the ones that I write after that, they can be a little bit lower, but the pricing one will always be the highest price.
Exactly. Because I always think with anything like this, you think, well, if it wins me one more project in a year, or if it allows me to put my price up by 10%, like what's that worth? And then it's worth way more than $30 or $40, you know. It's like, I don't know.
And that's what you've got to convey in that, you know, on that page, like what you said before.
Yeah,
just talk about those benefits. Like you say, if you can make an extra, I don't know, even £1,000 on one project,
exactly,
then it's paid for itself, you know, 100 times over, isn't it?
So. Exactly. Yeah,
I want to just come back to something Jack mentioned, based on the better notifications. So I'm just on the site here looking at one of the add-ons. And I noticed that you mentioned it, and you also have an unlimited sites option. I just wonder why not just let people pay for every site they want to use it on? What is the rationale for making it like, here, pay this and you can just use it wherever you want?
Yeah, it's a good question. So actually, I started off with 4 offerings rather than 3. And I know 3 is like the golden number for selling things. But I started off with 4, and it was a single site, a 2-5 site, a 15 site, an unlimited site. And in like 2.5 years, I only sold 2 of the 15 site licenses because I thought, well, do I really need unlimited sites? You know, does anyone really, how many sites can someone make, you know, in a couple of years, you know, really? So I thought, well, I'll do 15 sites, and maybe if they people buy that one, then I won't do the unlimited site one, because really, you know, I'm going to use this one thing, and it's a very small thing on 15 sites, then that'd be worth it. And it's a bit cheaper than unlimited sites, but no one bought it. So I just got rid of it. In fact, more people bought the unlimited one. So, because I think that's that selling mindset, really, you know, you think, oh, I'm getting everything. So I had that. It's, to be honest, it's, I think for me, it's more of an upsell from the other options. So they see unlimited, they see premium. And also you're comparing all of those prices to, you know, to each other.
Yeah.
So you look at the custom fields add-on, for example, and you've got these 3 price points, and then you're just thinking about that add-on at those 3 price points. You're not thinking about it compared to one of the other add-ons or another plugin. So that way you can kind of make up your mind as to what you want to buy. Plus you can upgrade and downgrade your plan. So when you're, or you're, you know, the subscription you'll purchase, so once you're in there you can, and it's all prorated as well, so you can upgrade to a 2-5 site license or unlimited site license or back down again, and it just gives that flexibility that once you have them as a customer, you can then make more money off them, you know, if they're happy with your kind of ecosystem of free plugin and add-ons that you've created for them.
Yeah, just if I was landing on the site and I want 6 licenses, I'd be like, hang on a minute, I want 6 licenses, and I'm either paying 240 odd quid or what is it, 70 odd quid difference. I just think there's a big difference between the two, obviously. And then do you ever get, like, I mean, say another agency that starts using your product on 100 sites, and do you not sit there thinking, well, I'm not in anything from those 100 sites, I'm only earning 250 quid each time. And is there that sort of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. So I will be the first to admit that my pricing in general needs a bit of an overview, because for the add-ons, because I've done quite a lot of development on some of the more popular add-ons in the last year. So it does need to be looked at. And I did do that about this time last year as well. I think the reason why I put them that way is because I started selling add-on bundles. So you can get, you know, the most popular ones, and then there are various sort of tiers of all of that. And they've been really popular, actually. And I've specifically created them, so the first one at least, so that you don't get all of the most popular ones. You'll always get, like, you know, a couple of them, but not all of them necessarily. And that way I'm not doing myself a disservice, or, you know, stopping people from being able to buy individual ones as well. But I don't have any customers that have hundreds of sites that they're using unlimited site licenses on. And I can check, because, you know, you look at the unlimited site licenses that you've sold, you look at the number of licenses that have been activated against that account. And I think the most that I've got is like 8 or 10. So it's not that many, but it's more than the 2-5 site license. So I can see what you mean about, you know, you want 6, but that's quite a big jump and everything. In that case, you just have to kind of work out for yourself, okay, I want 2-5 site license, and then I also want a single site license. A lot of the time I find when I'm working on a client project is that I'll only need a single site license because I'll be working with that client will pay for that product. I don't want to be responsible for the ongoing cost of that unless I've got some kind of a support contract with them as well. So it's just, I try and be as flexible as possible in that regard.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's good. I mean, it's a popular model. Lots of plugins use the same pricing structure, you know, that either what a single site license and then an unlimited site license, or a bit of a mishmash in between. I just wondered if there's a reason for saying, you know, go and use it wherever you want. I think that's interesting.
I think, and that was kind of a bit of a question from experience, wasn't it, Mark? Because of what's kind of happened to us with one of our products, is that we know that it's been taken, like someone has an unlimited license on it and is kind of like reselling it over and over. And then you start to think, well, like, we're not getting any of the value from that. So yeah, it's a tricky one, I think. So I think Mark, we'll shy away from unlimited licenses from now on, just based on that one experience. But I think I think the plugin, the functionality of the plugin matters in that case.
What it does is defines that to a certain
extent. I was going to say that. It depends on who your buyer is.
Exactly.
Like if it's an agency, you know, then they're going to keep reselling and reselling and reselling. You want to capture that value every time. But if it's a DIY person who has like 4 or 5 blogs, then it's not so bad, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. I think I would prefer the model of site one is X and then site two is a percentage of X and site three is a percentage of site two. And so that it ramps down a little bit for the client. If you've got lots and lots of licenses, you're not having to pay the same for everyone because we'd be still getting a good value from that. But they do get a bit of a benefit from having lots of them. I think that's probably where we go, but we're not sure.
Well, we had a conversation, didn't we, Mark, recently where we were talking about someone wanted to buy one of our products from us. And he's probably going to need it multiple times as he grows his business. So he's going to need one per site and he's building lots of sites. And we were saying, well, how much should we discount? You know, should we give him half price for, like, after the first one or whatever? And I said to Mark, why are we giving any discounts? Like, what actually, like, he's getting the same value every time. He's selling this product to his customers. He's making money. So why are we not, you know, what is the actual reason for giving a discount? Unless if you didn't give a discount, you wouldn't get the sale. I guess that's, I don't know. It was just an interesting kind of thought exercise.
That's the tightrope that you walk.
I suppose the answer to that, Keith, is that actually there becomes a point where he's paying too much for the product and he could just get commission someone to build the product for him.
Yes, that's what
he's actually paying out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how we ended our conversation, isn't it? There is a point where it just doesn't make no sense to keep paying for individual licenses. Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
We're almost an hour up.
I know. Wow,
that was been so
quick.
It did. Yeah. So thank you very much for those points you made. It was a really interesting discussion. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks to everyone that joined us. And before we finish, where can people kind of find you on the internet, Tom?
You can get me on Twitter. That's where I am most of the time. I'm at Tom_Hurst. And you can get me online at tomhurst.com.
Excellent. And Jack?
I'm at Jack McConnell on Twitter. And madewithfuel.com is probably the easiest way to find me and all the stuff that I do.
Excellent. Great. Thank you. Again, thanks for joining us, everybody. If you want to subscribe to the YouTube channel, that will be awesome, and you won't miss any of the upcoming WP Cafe episodes that we have. Next month, we have an exciting episode about marketing in WordPress, so hopefully that'll interest a lot of you and you can tune in to watch. But for now, we'll call it a day for there. Thanks again for joining us, everyone, and we'll see you again soon.
Thank you.
See you later.
Bye.
Cheers. Thank you. Yeah.